Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild, Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. We're going to be doing a series over the next several weeks. I've invited a few guys on that know a thing or two about elk hunting, and I'm going to be throwing them very similar scenarios that you may encounter or that most guys who've done any kind of elk hunting have encountered on their hunts, and see how they would handle it. And even though a lot of the questions will be the same, a lot of scenarios will be the same, it's very interesting to listen to the different approaches from these guys that seem to get it done year in and year out. And so I think it's a really neat perspective and a cool way to learn that way. When you're presented with those scenarios or those situations out in the field, you'll be able to apply it. I also want to urge you guys to take the time and please go on iTunes or the Podbean app. Give us a review. It's super important for us. Helps the ratings, helps keep us ahead of everything, and helps us keep this podcast free, to be honest with you. So if you get out there and do that for me, I would appreciate it. And please go check out Phoenix Shooting Bags. They're our number one sponsor, and they put out an awesome product, and we appreciate them. And I'd appreciate it if you could go check them out. Let's roll into this next episode. Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild, Big Game Hunting Podcast. Today we are talking with Joel Turner. We're going to be talking elk. And I'm going to continue on with my What Would You Do series. I've invited a bunch of friends and guests on that are who I consider the cream of the crop and the guys that get it done all the time on elk. And I'm going to be giving them very similar scenarios. And these are just real popular situations, or not popular, but stuff that you'll see often while elk hunting. And we're going to give it to the guys and see what they would do with that when they're in that situation. So what's going on, Joel?
Just a beautiful day here, man. Ready to talk some elk, buddy.
So before we get into these questions, you made a comment on a post I did on Instagram the other day. I shared one of the videos that I made for my elk clients. Mm-hmm. And you had mentioned something that you wanted to talk about, or you wanted to elaborate on the, because I was telling people they may have to stop the bulls themselves, especially right. If I'm calling back far behind them, 60 yards or so or whatever, and I can't see exactly, the shooting lane. Anyway, so I'll let you pick it up from there.
So that post that you did on Instagram, I just want to explain that a little bit further about adding a stop sound to your shot sequence. And that is what a lot of people do not practice, but it is the absolute reality of what's probably going to happen in your elk shot. So, the whole sequence that you showed of drawing back and staying out of your sight system, that's very important because you have to be able to look around your bow and not create a bunch of movement, but see where that bull is going to stop or where you need to put the stop sound in. So as the bull's coming in, you make the stop sound and then you climb into your sight system and then you do your trigger work. And that's where people get all jumbled up, because imagine what's going through your head. You're trying to figure out where you're going to stop this bull. Things are happening fast. You're trying to make a sound. A lot of people do it with a call like you did. I prefer to do it just with my voice. I give them a big old, right? And that tends to stop them in their tracks a bit better than a cow sound. So it stops them in their tracks, and then your mind starts racing. How far was it? What pin do I use? Do I look through? People forget all the steps of their shot that they've practiced. Number one, because they've practiced throwing the physicality of it instead of the mentality of the shot, right? Mm-hmm. But when you make that stop sound, your mind's going to race. You got to reach into that quagmire of questions and all the weird stuff that's going through your head and pull out your conscious mind, right? Pull it out of there, stick it where it needs to be. It needs to be in your trigger work, but you first have to aim, right? So doing that stop sound and practicing that, and then after you make the sound, the bull stops, then you climb into your sight system, then you do your trigger work. It's very sequential. So like I said, a lot of people will not practice that, and that making that stop sound and then coming to the realization that the bull actually stopped where you wanted it to, and it's standing there broadside at 25 yards, it just blows people apart if you've never practiced putting that stop sound into the shot sequence. Even in my clinics, I have people do that. And, we've been working on shot control all day long, and they're totally into it. They're working through their shot. They're in total control of it. And then I have them do a stop sound and it all goes out the window instantly. So it has profound effects on your mind. So again, the skill is being able to reach into that quagmire of the uncontrolled shot and pluck out that conscious mind and put it where it needs to be. So, you know, talking yourself through that shot is a huge deal.
Yeah. The only guys that really don't have a problem doing this, the guys that hunt out of tree stands in the Midwest and back East that are used to stopping deer with a man, you know, type deal. But most guys out West, we don't do that. You know, we don't hunt out of tree stands and we're usually sneaking up on something and, you know, sending a long shot and not having to stop the animal. But this particular situation, you know, is very, very different. So,
right. And sometimes, you know, sometimes you don't want to stop the animal, right? So, I mean, if that bull's walking by you at 5 yards, there's no reason to stop him. You know, put your pin where you need it and let her eat. But, you know, that situation where he's out there 25, 30 yards coming to that hole, you don't want to be necessarily taking moving shots in those situations. So,
and I'm sure I'll get some shit for this, but for me, 30 yards is my threshold. But I'm also not shooting a recurve bow. You're shooting a recurve. I practice moving shots, you know, out to 50, 60 yards, to be honest with you, but so that I can shoot 30 yards effectively on something that's moving. So if it's moving slow, you know, if it's just a slow walk, I'm not.
I mean, it's a skill in itself. It's a skill in itself. So good on you for practicing that. Absolutely.
And you really, it came about because of all the coyote hunting I did, and it's like a drive-by shooting. So like, I got so used to, you know, killing coyotes with the bow that they never stop. And when I stop them, that's when they duck my arrow. They're like,
right, absolutely.
The freaking Matrix and shit. Like, I never seen anyone get out of the way of an arrow faster than a coyote. But anyway. So, yeah, I try not to let them know I'm here at all. But, no, cool. I'm glad we talked about that a little bit. So I got these scenarios for you, and I'm going to run them by you and love to hear what you would do with them. First one I got, and this is a real popular one, and I've asked this of everybody because that I've had on about this, and I'll probably ask it to everybody I have on after you. It's earlier in the season. I mean, the rut's on, but it's still the rutting season, but it's the beginning part of the rut. It's hot. The moon is full. You're not really hearing bugles during the day, but you're hearing them all night long. You're hearing them at night. But darn it, as soon as the sunlight comes up, there's no more sounds. What are you doing in this situation?
Well, I switched to graveyard shift, right? So I would switch to actually locating these bulls at night and then getting as close as I can to them, you know, getting within maybe 300 yards of a particular bull and then just listening to what he's telling me. And as soon as I know when he's going to move, because his bugles will change from bull calling cow's bugles, that short, raspy, no chuckles, it'll change to a higher, fluty, no chuckles. He's still talking to his cows, but now it's a roundup bugle. So now when he starts the roundup, they're going to move, right? And that's why you got to be so close to them. So now you're getting the wind right and you're starting to move off to the side of the herd. You know, especially if they're usually moving uphill in the mornings, right? They're down low in the meadows by water, all that stuff at night. They're bugling back and forth to keep track of one another. But now as soon as you start to hear those roundup bugles, which is going to still be before light, now they're going to start moving up the hill. So, and what I do is I position myself off to the side of the herd so that the thermals that they're working as they're going up the hill, I'm out of their thermals. I'm off to the side, right? The wind's not usually blowing along the side of the hill. It's usually blowing up and down the hill. So I stay out of those thermals, and I just ghost them. And I stay with that herd because he's going to be doing roundup bugles. I don't need to say anything to him, really. If I need him to do a roundup bugle to find out where the herd's at, calf sounds, right? No cow calls, calf sounds. That's going to get the whole herd to respond to you. You won't necessarily call them in, but they will respond to you because now there's a lost calf that's out of the herd, right? So the bull bugle...
Just to clarify, you're doing this all in the dark still.
Yeah, in the dark.
Okay.
They have to be careful with calf sounds. I try not to say anything, but if I need to relocate them for some reason, like if I can't hear them walking, if they're not making any sound as they're moving, then I'll hit them with a calf sound. And you may call in a satellite bull, but you're probably not going to call in that herd bull with that. In the dark, the satellite bulls will just be all over you.
You may call it a mountain lion too.
Yeah, that's true. That's happened before. So, I mean, I'm just talking just a few calf, lost calf sounds, and then, you know, they'll respond. Now you've got them again, and you just stay with them until they stop. As soon as the roundup bugles change back to bull calling cow bugles, it's shorter, it's raspier, no chuckles still. As soon as it changes to that, they have stopped. They are now in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. That's when you go strike. And it's going to be like right after first light that you're getting in on these elk. So, you know, but go with the graveyard shift as far as just get after them at night and just, I, you know, I sleep within 400 yards of them, but way off to the side of them, as far off to the side of them and above them. So I'm not losing ground on them. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because chasing elk any direction is usually a losing battle.
For sure.
So that's how I handle that stuff.
Not too far off of what I do. You're the first guy that's mm-hmm. kind of really gone down that road, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I had Paul on Paul Modell, and I think he kind yeah. of has a little bit of similar tactic. But yeah, everybody else, I'm glad. This is why I'm doing this, is everybody's got a different way to handle a different approach. And that's, you know, devil's in the detail,
right.
I guess, you know, just kind of learning different stuff and having different, you know, one thing doesn't work. You got another thing to try.
I really like to get on the same level as the bull,
mm-hmm.
you know, same level of the hill, because the thermals are going up and down. You can come in from the side and you don't have to worry so much about your thermals. And then when you get in tight on them, just hit him with the old bull calling cow's bugle and he'll be in your lap.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So my second for you is, it's rainy, it's windy, calls aren't really carrying very long waves, and you haven't really heard a bugle all day. What are you doing?
Have I heard any bugles or like nothing?
Nah, probably. Yeah, I would say nothing. Maybe, let's say you heard one bugle. You know there's elk in the area. I'll give you that. You know there's elk in the area.
So if I know there's elk in the area and it's raining and windy, I'm usually kind of backing off of things, because I don't necessarily want to go bumbling into elk that I can't hear, I can't see. So I really despise elk hunting in the rain. And I know that's weird coming from a guy from Washington, but
what do you hunt, like 4 days a year then?
Yeah, no, it's actually not that bad here in September, but so I usually, you know, if it's really nasty, if I've heard one bugle, I know there's elk there. I will hopefully know that area and kind of know where they're bedding. And then I'm going to slide in there and probably do a breeding scene and get that bull to bugle again. You really have to be creative when the bulls are not bugling. You have to really give them a reason to bugle. And the breeding scene is one of the best ways I've ever found to be, you know, to get those bulls to bugle midday, any time of the day, because jealousy runs wild in bull elk. So it's very interesting when you go to that breeding scene, which is nothing more than calf sounds followed by tending bugles and glunking. So, I mean, gotcha. Your calls aren't carrying a long ways, and those calls don't carry very far either. But if there is a bull anywhere within earshot, rainy, windy, sunny, it doesn't matter. He's going to bugle to that. They don't seem to be able to stand those sounds in that combination.
Do you want to be a little bit more specific how you put together your sequence?
Like, you want me to do the sounds?
Oh, you could.
I'm going to have to go out and get my... give my calls.
You could just verbalize them.
You know, well, I mean, it's just
sound. I do it for this long, you know, whatever.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would just do lost calf sounds. And the reason that I'm so hyped up about calf sounds is they are such a neutral sound that pulls responses from elk. It gives elk a reason to respond to you. Like if you just do it with cow sounds, like if you're doing estrus cow calls, that's going to make every cow that's in that herd very suspicious of you. And it automatically eliminates the chance of them allowing their bull to even come to you, right?
Sure.
But calf mm-hmm. sounds are a whole different instinctive level for elk. So stick with the calf sounds. Just do several lost calf sounds, very high pitched. Keep it very high pitched, very whiny, like a lost calf. And then just start doing the tending bugles, which is nothing more than you moaning over the call, right?
Ooh.
Stuff like that. And then mm-hmm. your glunking sounds, whether you can do it with a mouth reed or if you just pop the end of your tube, that creates the breeding scene. Now there is a bull tending a calf, and it's a phenomenal system to get bulls to bugle. It will get satellite bulls to come in to watch the breeding scene, and it just creates responses in elk. So it's pretty interesting stuff, and I've had phenomenal success with that for all my cold calling scenarios.
Awesome. Okay, so now I kind of know where you're going to go with this one. Midday, okay. You haven't been on bulls all morning. Again, you know there's elk in the area. They're signed.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing midday to change it up and try to create some opportunity for yourself?
So like you said, you know where I was going with this, but I want people that when they get themselves in situations, they need to humanize it. By that, I mean, what would get a response from a human in this situation where there's nobody around you, right? Nobody around, right. Nothing's going on. What's going to get the response? If you just sat out there and bugled, that's not necessarily going to get the response because you'd be just the dude out on the empty street yelling. And people aren't going to want to come to you. They're not going to want to respond to you. They think you're crazy, right?
Right.
So the likely story, why would a cow be out in the middle of nowhere just mewing her face off? It's not normal for a cow elk to be doing that. So people they'll bugle to try to get midday action. They will cow call to try to get midday action. And all those things, you're only dealing with attitude. If you want significant responses from elk, you have to rely on instinct. What is, the sound that's going to bring every human being out of their houses is a baby crying in the street.
Right.
Right. That same empty street where the dude was yelling, no response. Everybody shut up in their house, looking out the windows going, that guy's crazy. Right. They're looking at the full grown female out there in the middle of the street yelling. Nah, they're still not coming out. But you put a baby in the middle of that street that's crying, everybody's coming out. Right. It's instinctive in mammals to help infants. So midday stuff, again, I would start with just mere calf sounds, lost calf sounds. You're going to get a cow to mew or a bull to bugle. If they're within earshot of that, if you get no response from calf sounds, I believe there's no elk there. So I move, right? So if I do a calf sequence, a lost calf sequence, very loud, very high, very whiny. If I do that and I get no response, I believe there's no elk there. So I move. Now, if I'm there and I'm, but at the end of that calf sequence, just to check, I'll throw in some tending bugles and glunking just to make it a breeding scene and not just a lost calf. Because if there's any reservation in that bull from letting everybody know where his herd is at, because he's probably being fairly cautious, especially if he's got a bunch of cows, right? If nobody wants to say anything, you introduce a bull into that, a bull with a right. calf, and you just put them over the top. Somebody's going to say something. And if nobody says anything, there's nothing there. You might as well move on. So that's how I treat it. I don't stay in areas where I'm not getting any responses from that. I just don't believe there's elk there. So I move until I get that response, which is, I mean, it's very, very high percentage that a bull or a cow will respond to you. So
fair enough.
That's what I did on my bull this year in Washington.
Yeah, I knew this bull. Tell me the story.
I knew the bull was on the hillside somewhere, but it was thick, like super thick. And I just kept calf calling and moving until I got a response. The one that responded was not the bull that I killed. But when that other bull responded, this bull bugled because they live together, right? They're constantly bugling back and forth. And then once I got closer and started the calf sounds just to relocate the herd, then all the cows blew up and then it was just, it was craziness from there. So
nice.
Yeah. So instinctive, you just humanize it, right? Think about how you would get a response from human beings. And that's how I handle all these elk calling scenarios.
It's simple. It's easy to remember and easy to follow. I find, and my cousin Anthony and I were having this conversation the other day, like mm-hmm. for the guy who doesn't live and breathe elk hunting.
Yeah.
And, doesn't practice the language on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost overwhelming sometimes when you know a lot, but mm-hmm. just because you know a lot of it doesn't make you an expert in it. Like for myself, I pretty much know having talked to every elk hunter you can possibly imagine, and mm-hmm. so I have a lot of information. It's to be able to mm-hmm. recall that information while you're in the heat of the moment is very difficult to do. Mm-hmm. It's not, unless it's second nature. So I think like having a couple, one or two or three, to fall back on styles or approaches mm-hmm. of attack. You know, like for instance, mm-hmm. yours is, you know, to use the calf sounds and to play on a certain, you know, instinct. Like
right.
to me, that it's almost better than knowing a whole bunch of stuff, because then you're out there and you get confused.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, I can make every sound an elk can make. I can make mm-hmm. every sound that I've ever heard. I can make on a call, but I don't use most of that stuff. If people want to know how to elk call, I teach them how to do a location bugle for before daylight stuff to find that bull. I teach them how to do lost calf sounds, and I teach them how to do the bull calling cow's bugle, right? If they really want to get, you know, advanced in this four call system, I teach them how to do glunking, right? Tending bugles and glunking. So if you know those sounds, if you know a location bugle, if you know a lost calf sound, if you know a bull calling cow's bugle, and you know some tending sounds, you're just basically moaning over the call for a tending bugle. That's really, that will play on every set of instincts that you need in the elk woods. Now you just got to take those sounds and humanize it. What would get me to go to this location to either fight this person, to save that baby, to do whatever needs to be done in a human situation? You know, people don't eat, sleep, and breathe elk hunting, but they do eat, sleep, and breathe being a human being.
Right.
So when you take that language that you speak every day and the instincts that you feel every day, and you plug that into the elk scenario, it's the same thing, but elk don't have societal limits. So their response is 100-fold what it is in the human being, because we're thinking about, you know, we're reasoning and we're thinking about, oh, I don't know if this is really happening or not. To a bull elk, that's happening because the sounds are telling him that's happening, right? There's no societal limits involved with that. So if you humanize things, elk hunting and elk calling gets way easier.
Yeah. No, for sure. I like that. I like simplicity sometimes. You know, it's like,
sure.
My last few years have been really getting caught up in trying to learn it all, you know? And I,
mm-hmm. sure.
sometimes I feel like that kind of bites you in the ass.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you should know it all. You should know it all, you
sure.
know, and that, you know, sure. that way, if something's not working, you could switch to something else,
sure.
but it's
sure.
almost better to have a plan of attack, I think, and yep. stick to that plan of attack.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, those sounds are all you need, man.
So my next scenario is one of those, like, you hear about it all the time. It's like, it's that dream hunt, you know, that mm-hmm. dream day of elk in the elk woods. You drop into a canyon and you like hit the jackpot, and there's literally bulls screaming in every direction. You could fart and they're going to bugle back at you. And, you know, assuming, well, let's do it both ways. Let's say you're trying to target one specific bull, or you don't give mm-hmm. enough.
Okay.
How are you determining which bull to go after, and what are you doing to get to him with all this? You know, it's like, I feel like a lot of times when you have too many directions, it's like the same thing with the call. Like, you get too many directions to go in. What do you do? What's the best scenario? You know?
So remember that chuckles are a bull-to-bull communication. They're part of a challenge usually, right? So mm-hmm. if you've got a whole frenzy of bulls bugling, most of the satellite bulls are not going to be bugling at the herd bull. They're going to be doing bull calling cows bugles to the cows. They're trying to call the cows out, right? So
okay.
you're going to have bulls doing the bull calling cow bugle, herding bugle, advertising bugle, whatever you want to call it. It's a short, raspy bugle with no chuckles. Those bulls are talking to the cows. The reason they're talking to the cows is because they don't have any, right? So they're probably a satellite bull. The bull that's doing most of the chuckling is defending, and he's talking to the other bulls. So that's probably the herd bull that's doing that. He'll also throw in a few bull calling cows bugles if his cows are getting out of line. He'll be working those cows, and the other bulls are going to be trying to get those cows out. So that's how I determine who I'm going after. As far as if that bull is doing a bunch of chuckling, he's challenging mm-hmm. the bulls. He's telling them to get the hell out of there. He's warning them. So he's probably the herd master. So he's the one I'm going after. Okay. Now, when you get into these frenzies, everybody's bugling. The cows are all going off. So if you get in there and you do bull calling cows bugles, or you do challenge bugles or cow calls or whatever you're going to do, yeah, you're going to get a response, but they're not necessarily going to move to you. You're not going to get the frenzy to move to you. Unless,
right, because you're just another sound,
you're just like everybody else. So you have to separate yourself. How do you make yourself cooler than everybody else in the locker room, right? You have to become the one that has the estrus cow, right? If you want to be the cool kid in the locker room, you got to be the one that's actually making out with your girlfriend over in the corner, right? And then the whole frenzy, no societal limits, is going to move to you. So how do you become the cool kid? You have to do a breeding scene, because breeding is not happening, right? It's not happening. Everybody's trying to, but everybody's, you know, vying for position and all this stuff, and everybody's talking to the girls, but nobody's actually doing it. Right.
So you're still at the club. They haven't made it back to the apartment yet.
Right. So if you want to be the cool guy that's actually got the girlfriend that's being promiscuous or whatever, that's the scene that you have to set. So what I do is, if I find myself in a bugling frenzy, the first sounds I do is glunking, because glunking is the sound of a bull tending an estrus cow. I don't do any bugling. I don't do any cow calling, no calf calling, no nothing. I get in there and I just glunk. All of a sudden, now, I'm the cool kid.
Quick question. Proximity-wise, how close are you trying to get to that herd bull before you're doing the glunking?
I get as close as I can, just so he can hear it. As long as he can hear the glunking, you know, and you may have to wait for a slight pause in the frenzy.
Right, right.
To get that sound to him. And what happens is the entire frenzy moves your way. So all the satellite bulls and the herd bull, everybody moves your way because you got one, right? And things are happening, right? And so mammals want to try to learn from that situation. They try to learn from fights and they try to learn from sex, basically, right? So on a primal level, they're trying to learn things. So they all want to watch the breeding scene. So you get in there and you glunk. And you do some tending bugles, all of a sudden you are the cool kid, you've got one, and the whole frenzy moves to you. I've done it so many times in New Mexico and in Arizona and in Wyoming. It's ridiculous how well it works when you become the cool kid that everybody wants to be like. So, I mean, you can listen to that frenzy and there's all kinds of craziness going on, but nobody's glunking and nobody's doing tending bugles because nobody's got one. Right. Nobody's got an estrus cow. So that's how you get the whole frenzy to move to you. And it works phenomenal.
Awesome. I definitely want to try that next time I get into that situation. I always feel like when I hear that situation, I mean, you're always so excited about it. But then, I shouldn't say, because I usually end up calling it a satellite bull or something with cow sounds. But
sure.
I've never been able to get to the